Hello and welcome to everyone listening to the Written in Melanin podcast, the place where you come to get your weekly dose of melanated creativity. I'm your host, CM Lockhart, an author of fantasy books featuring black girls who aren't all that nice, and the owner of the Melanin Library, an online database of books written by black authors. And in this space, I share with you everything I've learned on my journey as a black and indie author. I'm glad you're here. And today, you guys, Bethany Baptiste is joining us on the podcast. She is a preschool inclusion specialist by day and a young adult sci-fi fantasy novelist by night. If she's not writing an inclusion support plan or a story, she does retail therapy in Florida bookstores and takes scheduled naps with her three chaotic evil dogs. You can visit her at BethanyBaptiste.com or Story Sorcery on Twitter. And I am so excited to have her on the podcast, you guys. We've already had a little bit of conversation off screen, so I feel like y'all are going to enjoy this. But that being said, welcome to the podcast, Bethany.
Thank you. It is such a pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to have you. For those of you listening, I'm going to go ahead and tell you right now that Bethany is the author of The Poisons We Drink, and I know that y'all have seen that gorgeous cover somewhere on your timeline at some point. So once I saw it and I was like, oh, wait a second, we're mutuals. I could just ask her. Okay, cool. I had like a solid 5 minutes of hyping myself up before I sent that message. So I'm really glad that she responded. It was like, yes, we can do this. But that being said, for anyone who is listening to the podcast and they are not familiar with you, will you please introduce yourself to our listeners?
My name is Bethany Baptiste. I am from Jacksonville, Florida. I am a preschool inclusion specialist. I write Kidlit SFF. You can find me on Twitter at Story Sorcery, where I just have a lot of hot takes that no one asked for. And so, yeah, I wrote The Poisons We Drink, which is a YA urban fantasy set in Washington, D.C., and it follows a witch by the name of Venus Stoneheart. She runs an illegal love potion brewing operation, and in this world, there are all different types of love. There are love potions. There are familial love potions. There are self-love potions. There's friendship love potions. And then there are love potions where people can fall in love with an idea. And that is one of the types of potions that Venus brews, where people can fall in love with an idea. And so when her mother dies, she is offered the opportunity to avenge her mother's death. But she has to brew love potions where politicians can fall in love with the idea to not pass a hateful bill. And so there is a lot of chaos, front stabbing, back stabbing. There is just politics, potions, and power. And so, yeah, but to sum it all up, I would say it is practical magic meets Breaking Bad.
Honestly, I love the description because obviously, you know, you read the back of the book and you have vibes and things, right? But actually hearing you talk about the book and all the things that are in it, honestly, I'm not going to lie. I had to keep myself from cackling. We were like, oh, there's front stabbing, there's back stabbing. I'm like, oh, we got all the stabbings covered.
A little bit of side stabbing too.
It sounds really good. And I'm excited about it, honestly. So I know that your release date was shifted. It's May 7th, correct? So if you're listening to this, you have time to pre-order it. You have time to support. You have time to get the book, do all the things. So please do. Please do. Because we support black authors around these parts. But that being said, there's a lot happening in this book, Bethany. What was your inspiration behind it? Because from what you've said, it's not triggering like, oh, that kind of sounds like something that I've experienced before. And that makes me really happy.
Yeah. So it kind of started in 2016, election night. When I went to sleep, Hillary was winning. And when I woke up, Trump won. And I was like, well, wait, whoa. It was like a shock to my system. And that kind of just stuck with me for a while. And a few months later, in June 2017, I was just feeling very depressed. I sat down. I dusted off one of my favorite childhood movies, which is Practical Magic. And I sat down. I watched it. I fell asleep. I had a dream about a pink-haired black girl doing something very, very awful to someone else. And when I woke up, I was so fascinated by the dream. I was like, I have to write her down. And up until that point, for the most part, I wrote adult romances and adult fantasies in middle grade, FF. And so this was like one of the first solid YA ideas that I knew that I wanted to write. And so in Practical Magic, the catalyst in the story, at least the movie, is a love potion. A love potion causes all of the drama. And I was so fascinated by the idea that a love potion could cause so much pain and suffering and chaos and messiness that I was like, this pink-haired girl is going to brew love potions. But I didn't want it to be romantic love potions because I just thought that that was just so basic. And so I had to think about what other types of love potions could she brew. And at the time, I don't know what I was thinking, but I couldn't for the life of me figure out what other types of love there were. And so when I did research and then I came across the Greeks and how they define the different types of love, I was like, yeah, of course. Like, of course the Greeks would know this thousands of years. And so thousands of years ago. And so then I was like, oh yeah, familial love and self-love and friendship love and all of these other different types of loves. And I was like, oh, so she could brew love potions where she could bottle up those other types of loves. And so I found seven of types of love that I really liked, but I wanted eight because eight is my favorite number. And so I had to think really, really hard about what it was that eighth potion was going to be. And so I was thinking to myself, well, you know, the other love potions, you're either falling in love with someone else or you're falling in love with yourself. So then I thought about it and I was like, oh, she could help people fall in love with an idea. She can make people fall in love with an idea. And so once I realized that that was what I wanted, then it was, I have to set this story somewhere where this character, if she's brewing love potions where people fall in love with an idea, where can I get the most bang for my buck? And originally I wanted to set it in Florida, but it just didn't make sense. And so I thought long and hard. I was like, should it be in New York? Should it be in LA? Like, where should it be? And then it kind of just hit me like Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. is the place of ideas and ideals and philosophies. And an idea can turn into a bill, can turn into a law, can help someone get elected if enough people believe in it. And so once I realized that she had to be in Washington, D.C., then I started doing research about Washington, D.C. And I realized I really didn't know a lot about Washington, D.C. at all. I didn't know that it was a predominantly Black town. I didn't know that its nickname was Chocolate City. I didn't know that it had such deep history. And it fascinated me that there was really two sides to Washington, D.C., and we're so used to the postcard side where it's like, you know, the Capitol buildings and the White House and the museums and the pristine, you know, statues. And then on this other side is the real side of Washington, D.C. that's kind of hiding in this shadow of the Washington, D.C. that everyone else was taught to. Yeah. And so what it stood for. And so I liked that clear divide of this is what it pretends to be and this is what it really is. And so that's when I decided that I was going to make all of the witchers Black or a person of color or marginalized and queer. And I was going to make all of the humans, you know, stand for white people, even though not all of them are white, but stand for white people. And so, and then it just kind of spiraled from there because, as you all know, during Trump's reign in America,
of terror,
he passed a lot of hateful bills into law. And so then it was just like, okay, she's going to brew love potions where politicians can fall in love with an idea to not pass a hateful bill. And what would be the steps that she needs to take to make that happen? And what would be the ramifications if that actually happened? And that's kind of how the plot just kind of went up into smoke. into the atmosphere.
But I feel like it really works because, you know, at least from my perspective, right, there are a couple things that you said that kind of, you know, trigger thoughts of, okay, you know, I feel like there's a discussion that goes around in the Black and Bookish community of how we get, you know, important books, right? And those are the ones deemed talking about topics that are very much in the vein of, you know, The Hate U Give, right? It's very clear cut, like, this is about this. So hearing you talk about your book and the fact that it's YA, it's still contemporary fantasy, right? But it's still in that fantasy genre. I'm kind of wondering when people really get into your book and really start looking at it, especially since you were intentional about the groups that your characters are going to represent. If your book is also going to be, you know, fall into that category of an important book, especially depending on, you know, how the characters handle it in the book, because it sounds like, you know, the main character is like fighting back. She's not just complacent in it and is trying to actively make a change for the better. And, you know, I'm always curious about how people will receive things, especially when it's from a different lens or a different perspective than what they've always been kind of given, you know?
And, you know, so with The Poisons We Drank, one important choice that I made early on was that I really wanted to write morally gray Black characters. And so the characters were people, morally gray people of color. I really wanted to write them because if you're in a world that does not love you and view your existence as a threat, there gets to a point where you're sick and tired of being sick and tired. And therefore, you're going to do things. You're going to do not good things to protect yourself and the people that you love. And so it was fun writing The Poisons We Drink because, you know, Venus and the characters in the book, they do things that aren't very good. They're not very good. They're selfish. They are greedy. They are bloodthirsty. They are willing to hurt others if it means that they protect them and theirs. And I felt like that was very important because a lot of the times in Black fiction, there is this expectation that the Black main character or characters have to be lovable in order for you to relate yes. to them. And so, you know, in the book, there is an author note. And in my author note, I explicitly say, I wrote my characters to not be loved, but understood. And I feel like that's very, very important because, you know, especially when it comes to morally gray Black characters, people for some reason can't seem to relate to morally gray Black characters. But if you make them white, all of a sudden it's the synapses in the brain, everything, they connect. They can relate to them and what have you. And so it's so interesting that it was really difficult to get the book published because a lot of people just simply could not relate to Venus or the other characters. And it often made me wonder, okay, so, but if Venus was white, if the main cast was white and not Black, would you feel the same way? Would you be able to connect the same way? And so it's definitely something that a lot of people have to unpack. And not just white people, but the readers across the board. Because the other thing is, I feel like a lot of people who pick up YA books, they do not understand that the characters are still 17, 18, 19 years old. And so they're going to make teenager decisions. You have a lot of adults picking up YA books expecting the characters to act like adults and behave like adults. And that is not the purpose.
And I just need you to know that whether you accept it or not, we are now friends because everything you just said is just like, yes, thank God somebody is saying it. Because we, and I say we, like in like the bookish part of the community that I spend most of my time in, right? We have conversations about this all the time about how, one, like you just said, people pick up a young adult books expecting them to be adults, or they want essentially adults in teenager bodies. And it's just like, this is weird. Maybe seek therapy, because this book was literally not written for you, and you're criticizing a child for acting like a child. This is weird. You're expecting this child to do adult things and think in adult ways and make adult decisions when, again, I reiterate, they are a child. Like, they're teenagers, right? They're adult adjacent, but that important key word there is adjacent. They are not actually adults yet. So the fact that, you know, you're saying that, and you're saying that your book is written for the audience that, you know, who is it is intended for, one, also makes me really happy, because I'm like, I feel like for me, personal opinion, I feel like part of the reason why I've started to fall out of love with young adult fiction in general is because it is catering to adult mindsets. And I'm like, that's not what I came here for. I came here for I don't want to say frolicking, but like literally I came here for things to be a little bit simpler, to for a little bit more impulse, right? A little bit more like, girl, I wouldn't have done that, but go ahead, go off. Like, I want to enjoy it. I don't want to be sitting here thinking about existential things, because if I wanted that, I would have just gone into the adult genre or adult age range for a book to begin with, right? So that's thing number one. But thing number two is, do not get me started on morally gray characters, especially when it comes to writing morally gray Black women. People act like if anything about this woman is unlovable or unlikable or disagreeable, it's like, oh, why would you write her like that? Why would she just da da da? And I'm like, okay, before we start trying to nitpick and unpack everything about this Black character, who, let's be real here, there's like a handful of books that really like go full force with this, right? Before we start nitpicking and unpacking these things, which all realistically came out, you know, after 2020, if we're being completely honest, right, why don't we go through the whole slew of books featuring white female characters who, honestly, I don't even know why they're the main character of the book. They're the main character of the book because they have to be the main character of the book. And we're not going to talk about how they're not unlikable, or, no, it's complicated. Okay, so you're saying that you're not lacking the ability to think critically. You're saying that you're choosing not to think critically when it comes to this character, because she's Black. Oh, that's interesting. Choices are being made. And I feel like I want the conversation to be talked about a little bit more, because we're not talking about me, but in my book, We Are the Origin, like, I always say that I write books about Black girls who aren't all that nice. And it is always interesting to me when a specific set of readers identify with the one white character in the book who is purposefully written to kind of show that, hey, if you're not the main character, the things that you're doing are actually quite annoying. From the outside looking in, this is actually quite annoying behavior. And it's always interesting when I get those comments and they're like, oh, well, why didn't she just, you could have just, I could have, but in real life and in other fantasy books, that's not how this works. But this is what it looks like when everything doesn't fall into your favor, because you have plot armor, because you have main character protagonist powers, as you know, let's say when we watch anime, right? She ain't got no protagonist power, so she's annoying in this book. And it's like, oh, look how it looks now. This is how we felt the entire time. But I digress. It's not about me. It's not about my books. But I just love that you brought that up. And I am always here for morally gray characters, because they're going to be complex. They're going to be nuanced. No one's going to make the right decision for the sake of being right all the time. And those characters, when they are super annoying. So when you were describing your book and you're like, you know, Venus and her friends will do what has to be done to protect them and theirs, I'm like, I love it. I'm here for it, because there are absolutely some lines that will be crossed and need to be crossed if you come at me weird, if you come at me funny. And you put it in the summary that, you know, they killed her mom. Okay, lines have been crossed. Retribution will be dealt, you know? But anyway, you know, I digress.
To bounce off what you were saying about a lot of times people will find that one white character and latch onto that white character, I actually had that issue when I was querying Poisons We Drink. The prologue is written in the point of view of an old white man who's doing something that he has no business to be doing. And so He shows up periodically throughout the story, but the prologue is his because it just offers an introduction into the world through the eyes of a human, because the world is humans versus witchers. And so I got a lot of agent comments saying they love Mr. Mouse and they wish that he was in there more. And it was so interesting to me because it was like the story literally isn't about him at all. Like he does has his moments in the story and there is a reason why he's in the story, but it was just so fascinating to me because the story is literally like 98% BIPOC. You latch on to the one white character that you were introduced to in a minute, and to say that you're disappointed that he's not in there more, it speaks a lot to there a lot of white readers, agents, editors, what have you, they will literally latch onto a white character as their avatar to help them move safely through the story because they can't give themselves the permission to actually connect with BIPOC characters. So they have to find someone of the same skin tone that they feel they have a likeness to, and then that's how they latch onto it. Now, mind you, it is a YA book, so there are BIPOC teens in it, and the character that you want more screen time for is a wrinkly old white man.
Okay. It's incredible because I talked about this before, and it will probably be like a moment that I take with me for all the books that I write, but I had an editor. And he was a white man. And like I said, when I started talking to him about like, okay, I'm going to write book two, he was like, well, why don't we make this side character who is not the main character? Notice these are my books. Ain't it's blackity black black. For those of you listening, if you were unaware, my book is blackity black black. I write about black girls who aren't all that nice. And everybody in the book, except for this one to two characters, are black unambiguously. So throwing that out there. So when I was talking to him and he was like, oh, maybe we should put this character at the forefront and then maybe we should position the main character as not as good as this white character. And maybe she's jealous of her because reasons. And I was like, you really sat here and said that on a video call to me like it was a good idea. And it's like you latched onto this idea that this character has to be this. And I remember talking to him and he was like, well, I just don't think Sarah would do that. And I'm like, you're telling me, the person who created this character, that she's acting outside of what she would actually do? Sir,
he was trying to be your audacity. White sensitivity reader. He was trying to be your white sensitivity reader.
That was unnecessary because I was like, I will quickly yeet her out of this book, quick, fast, and in a hurry, before I ever put her as the main character on the cover of the book. Like, are you insane? You're cracked. You're unwell, and I cannot help you. But I find it interesting, and I'm excited knowing that you have written what you have into your book and hearing you talk about it. It makes me a lot more excited to get into it because I'm not gonna lie to you. I'm not gonna hold you. I'm the type of reader. I'm like, if you're gonna put black characters in a book, I want them acting and feeling like black characters and not white characters cosplaying in black skin. And so the way that you're talking and the way that they're also morally gray, because again, if we're not going to make decisions that align with things that actually make sense and we're just going to do things because plot, I'm also like, I'm not here for it. Like, I don't want to do it. I don't want to participate. So I'm genuinely excited to read The Poisons We Drink. And if you're listening to this, this is another slight plug to pre-order the book or purchase it if you're listening to this when the book is already out. But that being said, we talked a little bit about this off camera, but one of the things that I like to discuss on the podcast is, you know, the journey of like, how do we get here? And I know you had touched on it before a little bit, talking about how you had written other stories and you more so in the adult realm, right? So can you like tell us about your journey about like, okay, how you started writing, maybe just for you or whenever you started writing to, okay, now here we are, you have, you know, Izzy Hawthorne out, you have The Poisons We Drink, and I'm sure that these are not the last books that you ever plan to write. So
yeah,
how do we get here?
Well, start with my little life story. It started when I was like in the fourth grade. I'm old, so I'm about to say something that's really gonna make y'all be like, wow, she's really damn old. But growing up, there was this VCR recorder thing called TiVo. And so, like, when it first came out in the early 2000s, it was like the hottest thing on the block. And so one day I come home from school and I see the TiVo for the first time, and I was so fascinated by it. And so TiVo, it basically went to the channel that you wanted to record a show, and it would record that show so that you could go back and rewatch it, which was like the best thing ever back then. And so I get home, I look at the TiVo, and I see that my dad had recorded 3 episodes. It was the first 3 episodes in the first season of Inuyasha, which is an anime. And so,
yes,
I sat down and watched it, and I was so obsessed. I watched those 3 episodes so many times. Like, I was obsessed. And so then I went on the internet. I had to find out everything I could about Inuyasha. And so I started researching, and I came across fan fiction. And so fanfiction.net, to be specific. And I started reading the fan fiction of Inuyasha, and I was absolutely obsessed with the idea of fan fiction. I had never heard of it before, but like, once I started reading fan fiction and watching the TV show side by side, over time I started opening up like spiral notebooks and started writing little stories. And I eventually, that moved on into, I started trying typing on like WordPad on the computer because we couldn't afford Microsoft Word. And then it moved into like, I'm going to get like a bootleg version of Microsoft Word, and I'm going to start typing my little fan fiction. And so by the time I got to middle school, I was writing fan fiction on fanfiction.net. Mm-hmm. And other websites as well. And so it was such a experience because I got something that really shaped me into the writer I am today, and that is reviews and feedback. Yeah. And let me tell you, if you wrote something that fans in the fandom did not like, and they were gonna tell you exactly what you did wrong. I got constructive feedback. I got not so constructive feedback. I got, you know, really just really good encouraging reviews, and then I got some hateful reviews. But it helped me. It really shaped me into trying harder. And so by the time I got into high school, I was really into fan fiction, writing fan fiction, but I went beyond Inuyasha. Now I was writing like True Blood out then? Maybe that was a little bit later, but I started writing like other TV shows, like CW and HBO type TV shows. And so then I dropped out of high school at 16. Due to my chronic illnesses, and I got my GED at night. So during the day, I had a lot of time. And so that was kind of the shift for me, where I was like, I want to start writing stories where the characters look like me and not like other people. And I was scared because up until that point, I was so used to relying on the characters in the world of others, of that others created. I didn't think I had it in me to write, to create world and magic systems and create characters and give them personality. I didn't think that I had that in me. I thought that I could only use what other people have given me like as tools. Mm-hmm. But I gave it a try. And so at 16, that's when I stopped writing fan fiction and I started writing original fiction. So I wrote original fiction. I would post on little, what is it, fiction archives and things like that, original fiction archives. And I would also read original fiction on those same archives. and that helped me get better. I started consuming more books. That helped me get better. And then as I made my way through college, because I went to college at 17, so now I have this whole new world. So I'm a baby. I just turned 17, and one of the best courses that I ever took was English Comp. It taught me a lot about structure and taking care in your words. One of the best courses that I ever had. And so then I started treating my craft more seriously. And by the time I finished with college, I wanted to write a middle grade. And so I wrote a middle grade. And I queried it. I queried it in 2016 when I was teaching, and was like, I was a baby. I was like maybe 22 or 23. And I got a lot of rejection. I got so many rejections. Like everyone hated it. Everyone hated it. And so I queried it for 2 years. Yeah, like 2015, 2016. I like queried it for 2 years. Just didn't work out. So I put it down. And then the 2016 elections happened. And then a few months later, I was terrified of writing again because my querying experience with that middle grade, it was my first middle grade that I ever wrote. It just really traumatized me. Traditional publishing and querying was very different back then. But then a few months later, in 2017, that's how the poisons we drank came to be. And so it was just kind of just shooting my shot. I was like, well, if this middle grade didn't work out, then let me try YA, because I was consuming a lot of YA. And so, yeah, that, and I wrote The Poisons We Drink from June 2017 to August 2019. And immediately after I finished writing it, I took it out to query. And I also did a little pitch contest, like a Pit Dark. I think it's Pit Dark. And also DV Pit and things like that. And I got agent likes, and so I sent it off. But I got a lot of rejections because I knew where the agents were stopping in the story. I knew the exact point. And so this is 2019. This is fall 2019. And so there's a scene in the book that I knew that when I wrote it, I was like, this is going to give me a lot of trouble. But I wanted to keep it because it kind of just encapsulated the heart of the story for me. And so, and it's not a secret, but my character, Venus, she burns a cop at the stake. And I felt like it was very important. It was a very important moment in the story to show what she's willing to do for the sake of vengeance, for the sake of revenge. And so I knew that was the part, that chapter. And it was very early. That chapter was where they stopped. And so once I got one of my last rejections, I just put the book away. I put the book away and I walked away from it. And we moved into 2020. And so from January 2020 until June 2020, we already know what happens, right?
Yeah.
That COVID, we've got the BLM protests. And so several friends of mine who had read the book, they were like, wow, your book is like hitting note for note. All the stuff that's happening right now and why people are just so, so sick and tired and angry. And you should really query the book again. And I was just like, I didn't want to, because I just felt like, well, if they didn't want it in 2019, before all this stuff happened, then why would they want it in 2020? But they convinced me to do Pit Mad in June. And so the day before Pit Mad, it was my birthday, and I got a rejection. I got a rejection that was like, this book is literally so bad. Like, you should not have queried this. It was like in the vein of that. And I was like, okay, I'm definitely not doing Pit Mad. Like, I'm not doing Pit Mad, because I sent this query like all the way back in 2019, and she is emailing me months later saying that my book is so awful, it shouldn't even be considered for querying. And this is like the day before Pit Mad, and it was my birthday, and I was like, yay, thanks.
Wow.
So I was like, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it, because I haven't edited it. Like, I'm not going to do it. And they were just like, just do it. So I put my tweets, I put my pitches in the tweet deck, scheduled it, mm-hmm. walked away, went about my day. And then randomly on the day of HitMad, I looked and the likes were just, it was at 300, mm-hmm. 400, and 500. And then it was over 1,000. And I was like, wait, whoa, what's happening? And so then, you know, I started like picking through the agent likes and the editor likes. And I got like mm-hmm. over 30 editor, not editor, I got over 30 agent likes. And then I got like a few editor likes at publishers. And I was just like, whoa, like I just really did not expect for it to be like that. And so the tweet was, the pitch was, as a uprising brews, a witch must protect her sister during a rebellion before a dark sentient magic devours her free will. And so like that was mm-hmm. roughly the pitch. And so then I started sending out queries, and then the queries turned into same day fulls. And then like within a few days, I had three offers and I had to pick someone, and I picked them. That was in July. We started revising the book in August and September. And then by the end of October, the week of Halloween, mm-hmm. we sent it out on submission to 25 editors. And, you know, crazily enough, it was the week before the 2020 presidential election. So I wrote mm-hmm. the book in response to the 2016 election. And now my book is going out a week before the 2020 election. And it hadn't been our intention, but I was like, well, if they read it, maybe they can see what I'm trying to do because of what the story is supposed to stand mm-hmm. for.
They didn't see what I was trying to do.
There was a lot of, they adultified my character. I was told that Venus just behaved too much like an adult. She doesn't. I was told that they simply could not connect with the character. I even had one editor tell me that Venus reminded her so much like Katniss. Right? Venus reminded her so much like Katniss that she was just too old. She just was too old. And I was like, you almost got it. You almost got it. Because if you compare Venus and Katniss, they're older sisters. They have younger sisters. They live in a dystopian world. They have a complicated relationship with their mother. They do anything for their family. They make very rash decisions. They react to a world that does not want them. You might not agree with the decisions, but you understand why they did the decisions. Note for mm-hmm. note, bar for bar. And yet, what's the difference between Venus and Katniss? Katniss is white and Venus yep. is black. And so Venus got adultified, even though that editor could make the connection that Venus is a typical YA protagonist. But because of her black skin, she's adultified. And so I would get those types of rejections. And so it got to the point where I went to my agent and I was like, how can traditional publishing make these like Black Voices Matter pledges for 2020? How can mm-hmm. how can they make those promises? And then when you give them a book that explores what it means to be Black in a country that does not love us, why are they adultifying my Black characters when in the same token, we have Black people on the street being gunned down because they're adultified, or being attacked and because they're being adultified? And so he made a thread about why, you know, editors should be mindful of what they say when they are describing why they can't connect with a Black story or a Black character, especially when you're adultifying them. And mm-hmm. so we got a lot of crickets, and I went to him, and it was at that point, it was early 2021. And so I went to him and I was like, you know what? I think it's best if we put a pause in this story so that I can work on something else. and he agreed with me. And so we made the deadline for the first week of March. I believe it was March 1st. And at that point, we were in January. We got a lot of rejections. Other editors ghosted us. And then the day of the deadline, we had two editors reach out. Both of them wanted an extension on the deadline. And so I was like, okay, maybe, hopeful. We'll see what happens. The very next day, one of the editors was like, read it, didn't love it, and peaced out. So I was like, wow, I just gave somebody an extension for them to reject me. And so that was very upsetting. And so I was just so down that day. And then the very next day, I got an email saying that there was an offer on the table. And that was editor 25, 2 days after the deadline. That's how The Poisons We Drink got its little book deal.
That is a journey. Like, that is a journey. I will say this. I feel like there's more to kind of discuss here. So if you want, we could do a two-part podcast where we have what we've just discussed. I have one more question for you. And then we can do a part two. Want to do that?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
I'll take your lead.
So, okay, cool. So that being said, I have one question here, and then this will go up as part one. If you are listening to this, we will more than likely have a part two, depending on what is discussed and how it comes out. But I know that there are things that have been going on with The Poisons We Drink. And if you are listening to this podcast, then you probably already follow Bethany and know a lot of what's been going on. So I want to give her space to actually share that with us from her perspective. But before we go out and peace out on part one, I wanted to ask you, what writing advice would you give to any new authors starting out on their writing journey? Because you are true to this. You are not new to this. So anyone starting out, what do you got for them?
Yeah. So the advice that I offer to you in this, it may seem like a very duh, of course, but you'll be very surprised. You'll be faced with a lot of moments and a lot of obstacles that have you questioning this very thing. But it's important that you stay true to yourself, as cliche as this sounds. But I'm going to tell you why. In traditional publishing, you are going to come across beta readers and alpha readers, and you're going to come across critique partners and agents and editors and copy editors and proofreaders. You're going to come across a lot of people that want you to cut out pieces that make your story authentic for the sake of their own comfort. Do not do that. If you wrote the story for your audience, and your audience are people that share the same identity as you, do not sacrifice parts of your authenticity to make others comfortable. Stay true to you and advocate for yourself. It does not matter if they think you're uppity. It doesn't matter if they think you're a problem. Stay true to you.
I second that. All of that.
And I feel like that's a very big thing. Do not be afraid to speak up, because at the end of the day, here's what's going to happen. The longer you stay quiet and do not advocate for yourself, if they're already treating you like crap and you're being quiet, why does it matter how they treat you if you speak up? If they're already mistreating you when you're quiet.
Valid.
Stay true to you. It's not worth it. It's not worth it. It's not worth being inauthentic to make others around you feel comfortable. Fight for what you feel is important to your story. And that's simply that.
Okay. And I honestly have nothing to add to that, because y'all know over here on the podcast, like, I believe in that 100,000%. Write what you want to write, and write it for who you want to read it. And if you are not writing the books that you yourself want to read, then, you know, sit down, reevaluate what you're doing and why you're doing it. But that being said, you guys, that is it for this episode of the Written in Melanin podcast.
If you'd like to support this podcast, then please share it with someone that you think may enjoy it. Join the Patreon at patreon.com/writteninmelanin or grab a copy of my books from my website, cmlockhart.com. There are links in the show notes for everything, including my books, Bethany's books, and everything in between. And yeah, thank you guys so much for listening. Until next time, I hope all your books are full of melanin.
Bye.